You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This film is the story of a magical bear that lives in the woods, and sometimes it sees people, and it comes up with really complex fantasies about them, and sometimes it changes its mind halfway through and changes to another related but maybe not related fantasy. But either way, you know what? Maybe I just didn't totally understand Black Bear. That was what I walked away with. It was all in the mind of the bear. It's basically a bear Jacob's Ladder.
It is fun to imagine from the bear's point of view.
Yeah, it was like, what the fuck, people? Unfortunately, there's a severe lack of maulings in this movie, and I'll tell you, there's some people who I wouldn't have minded seeing mauled. Anyway, we are here to review the movie Black Bear. This is a much talked about film since it premiered at Sundance in January. I think it was much talked about largely because although Aubrey Plaza certainly has moved more and more away from comedy and more into drama, she certainly has done a lot of pieces where it's like, okay, this has got both comedic and dramatic aspects to it for sure. This is the first time I saw her in something I went, well, this is straight up intense drama for her. Can she pull it off? That's what we're here to decide. And joining me on this review, I've got Matt.
Hello.
Ryan.
How's it going?
And Ray.
Hello.
So this is from Lawrence Michael Levine, who's best known for writing the films Gabby on the Roof of July, Wild Canaries, and now this, so third. He also has been an actor in the past as well, been in such films as Richard's Wedding, All the Light in the Sky, and VHS 2. Here, he is firmly behind the camera in this two-part film. And I say two-part literally, like there's the first half, and then it says part two, and then the same actors play completely different roles and characters in the second half, which has some relation. It's a remote house in the mountains. So we see Aubrey Plaza has ridden into town with Christopher Abbott. The deal is that Christopher Abbott and his wife, Sarah Gadon, they own this house in the mountains, and they're trying to make money in some way. It was inherited, I guess, or was part of the family. They've said, okay, well, we're looking for creative types who want a nice place to come stay. So it's like an Airbnb, except we'll be here with you at the time. Also creative types. He's a musician. Aubrey Plaza's character is a filmmaker. And as the story goes on, tensions arise rather rapidly between the married couple there, as it's clear like neither one of them can say a single thing without the other one going, oh, well, no, not exactly. No, well, really, no, come on. That's not, I mean, if you've ever been in that situation before, and I know I have, you're like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. This is gonna turn bad real fast. But everything does, in fact, turn bad real fast, and I don't want to go too much further where that goes. But part two takes these and sort of turns them around a bit, where now Christopher Abbott is a film director, and they're filming a movie in the house. Sarah Gadon's his main actress, and they're apparently very close friends, and they're playing a practical prank on Christopher Abbott's wife, Aubrey Plaza, who is the lead star of the film, because he feels like she's just not getting there yet with her performance. And so she needs to be neurotic and upset and angry. And so they decide to sort of make her suspect that the two of them, Gadon and Abbott, are having an affair. They're not, but they might as well be for the amount of like intimate nefariousness that's going on there. And that as well.
Yeah, they're definitely doing a little jimming and pamming.
Yes, that as well does not turn out well for anyone. But yeah, that's Black Bear. Two movies that definitely have a relation to each other, and other than the same actors in the same house and a bear appearing at some point in a not wildly important specific way. It could have been a tree, quite frankly.
Yeah, it really could have been anything. I felt the same way at the end. So the fact that it's a bear seems just completely arbitrary.
I'm not sure what the relation is to the title being Black Bear. What does that have to do with anything other than we couldn't figure out what else to name it that wouldn't give anything away?
What I decided by the end, and if the writer our director or principal cast ever get to correct me, that'll be my lucky day. First off, I was confused because I was expecting it to be a triptych, right? Usually there's three vignettes.
I really expected that too.
I kind of decided that it is. I think there's a wraparound because there's the first shot of her on the pier. Mm-hmm. And then we're in on the pier, out on the pier in two stories in once. And then after everything is even resolved in the second story, we're back to the day shot of her in the fog on the pier. And she goes back to the kitchen, sits down to write again. And I think that's the wraparound. And the wraparound is this is two drafts. That's all I could come up with to make it like make sense. And I think the bear, I think, is like the black dog. It's the choice of ambition over relationships. And that's why she leaves with the bear in the end, instead of freaking out like she did in the first draft. Because Aubrey Plaza, their effective role in the second vignette is transposed. Allison yes. is the wife and not the interloper. So it's a confusing movie, but in a sort of good flowing way. Elevator pitch is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf plus Mother with an excitement mark. Because that's the vibe I got. And at first, like, I braced myself. Like, when the couple started to fight right away, I was like, oh, this is one of those movies that you write when you're 28 about your friends that are hitting the 7-year mark and breaking up, and it's only 20 minutes in, it's all going to be like this, and I'm going to die.
Well, that was the question there at that point, where when it gets to towards the end of this, and I didn't realize it was two films till it happened, I was like, all right, who's going to die? Because there's only one way to go with this story. One of them dies either by accident or on purpose. And then it's the other two trying to figure out what to go do about it, which is kind of conventional. So in some ways, I guess I was pretty happy that it chose not to go down the only road I thought it had available to it. I mean, it's not like they were going to like, she was going to run off in the woods and find an ancient Mayan temple that was haunted or something, you know?
And then it's like that almost happens. And it's like the movie itself realizes it can't do that. And restarts.
There's another thing that it reminds me of when they're fighting in the beginning, and we're seeing that dinner scene, and then the after dinner in the living room where they continue to drink and smoke and things like that. If anyone saw the original Force Majeure, not the remake, the sad remake that they did, there is the scene where the couple that everything has happened to in Force Majeure is sitting down after dinner in the late evening with his brother and the brother's girlfriend that's come up, and they start to have that argument and that fight about what's happened and everything. And you sit there as an observer almost going, oh my God, I don't think I should be in this room. I'm not sure I'm supposed to be watching this happen. Oh my God. And you just feel, and I got that same feeling from that conversation.
It's voyeuristic Schadenfreude, no question about it. And that seems to be almost like we should have a genre for that at this point, because there's enough stuff. Because I mean, a lot of films can be that. I mean, horror, you could say to some degree, is that. But this is a very specific, like, for people who really like to watch really great actors go from slowly simmering tension to outright, like, exploding at each other arguments. I've seen films like this that didn't work because the actors just weren't tremendous enough. Mm-hmm. And although I think Abbott is kind of a journeyman actor at this point of his career, Plaza is breaking out all over the place with how much talent she's got oozing out of every pore. I mean, we obviously know she's very funny. And here she's, although occasionally sardonically funny, she's never not called on it when she uses it. And she uses that for dramatic purposes. I think this movie is saved entirely for me by her performance.
Yeah, and I think in the second half especially, like, I feel like there was a lot of, like, her typical, like, trademarks in the first half.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit of diversion from it, but, like, in the second half, I have never seen her in that way before, and I did not see. It was crazy to me that was Aubrey Plaza, because, like, she has delivered some really good performances. Like, I really loved Ingrid Goes West. But it still felt like the director was using what we know about Aubrey Plaza, like, really effectively. But this felt like she was really just, like, stepping out of her comfort zone. And I don't know. I mean, this is honestly one of the best performances I've seen in a really long time. I agree, Chris. I think it totally, like, anchors the movie and makes it, like, absolutely worth watching.
But, I mean, Sarah Gadon's always good, and she mm-hmm. holds her own here, but I don't feel like she ever is asked to do as much interesting as Aubrey Plaza. I came out at the end of this film with more questions than anything, going, why did you choose to do it this way? What was the significance of the bear? What was the significance of making this movie at all? What were you trying to say? And I didn't feel like, not only were there no clear answers for any of this, I don't think he had answers. It felt like an exercise, but a fun to watch one.
And I think there was something that Christopher Abbott's character said in the first half where he was talking about like characters and like what stories mean. His wife was sort of criticizing Aubrey Plaza's character about like, oh, you don't know what your stories mean. And it almost made me feel that way about Black Bear as well. Like the whole thing comes off as like more of a feeling and like just being in the moment. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just playing with all these similar themes that make you feel the same way. I'm not sure it all fully came together for me at the end either.
Then Plaza answers him, Allison answers him, and she says, no, I know what I'm saying. I just think the actual movie is the only way to say it, which I thought was a really incredible answer. This is a bit of a digression, but have you guys all seen Sideways?
Yes.
It's been a while.
There's a scene in Sideways where Paul Giamatti is walking down the street, and even though he's not like exaggeratedly moving or gesticulating or anything, you can tell he's rehearsing what he's going to say. And there's the moment where Audrey Plaza is sitting with her face in close up here, and she makes one weird little smirk for a split, like it's a micro expression, and you can tell that that's the moment when she decides she's going to break up this couple. It's the best performance I've seen in a while. Probably this needs a nomination for something this year.
Agreed.
I was telling my wife, like, although I could see coming back to this movie just to watch Plaza work, because it is a tremendous, interesting, subtle performance where she's asked to do some really interesting things without saying the words that indicate what she's trying to do. And that's fascinating. I think that's the highest point of this. This and Anya Taylor-Joy, who did something very similar in The Queen's Gambit on Netflix with her performance in there, where it was so much about what she didn't say and the tiniest little micro expressions that led to me just being fascinated by her. You can't take your eyes off her. Or you can't take your eyes off either character here. And I kind of wish that the rest of the material had been stronger.
The other thing I will say on the pro side for this movie is that the filming itself is pretty attractive and also more technical than it looks, kind of in the way Birdman was, because it's got this, you know, fifth man character in the form of, I guess the expression would be sixth man. I forgot how sports ball worked. But it's got a phantom character in the form of this house that they're shooting in, which is a gorgeous location that dictates part of the movie, kind of like the gorgeous location in, what was the movie with the robot lady?
Ex Machina?
Yeah, that I was like the only person that didn't love.
I can't believe y'all got that immediately. I was like, Battle Angel Alita?
That's a lot.
The location's very present, and the part in the second half with the stressed out film crew, all those ensemble members were great. Particularly the boom mic operator, who, if you pay attention, she's constantly eavesdropping.
Yes.
When she calls for room tone and someone's crying and making noise while she's getting room tone, and she keeps making these like this face where like she's not allowed to yell at the person, but she's visibly annoyed.
And it's great that you have that in that, because even if you've never been on a film set and you don't have those things that some of us have where you're going, oh my God, I've been there, done that, oh my God. But you do have those little moments and these the extended coffee joke and some other things that are going on. You have those moments that give you the comedy you need in that second half too, because you've got this director that has really pulled an asshole move.
Yeah, he's really doing a Hitchcock.
Oh my God, you just do not do to an actress. That is, I mean, whether she's your wife or someone you've never met, I don't care. That is an asshole move. And it's the only thing that kind of pulls you out of that a little bit, at least for me, for being just so angry and focused on him, was these little great comedy moments going on in the background.
It is weird that there were all those little mini stories going on with the crew, and everyone else is kind of in a comedy of sorts, like a behind the scenes type camp comedy, except for Aubrey Plaza, who's the comedian. Yeah. She was the only one who's like the whole time decidedly not in a comedy.
The AD and the boom mic operator and the script reader all have a love triangle. And
yeah.
It just happens in the background and it's not talked about.
It's almost like Easter eggs, the way it's dealt with. But we got to go to final thoughts. Ray, why don't you get us started?
I look at this and on first watch, there's a lot to think about, but that's a good thing. As I thought about it, after I'd watched it, I found more and more things that I liked about it. Don't get me wrong, I didn't hate it when I first watched it. Oh my God, I don't understand the bear and I don't get that, you know. But, I mean, at least there was a bear. Okay, an aside. If anyone remembers a movie that was shown at Fantastic Fest several years ago, and I guess at other festivals, called Vic and Flo Saw a Bear. That's the title. There's no bear in that entire movie.
Can you tell me this, Ray? There's this movie that refers specifically to something coming at night?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then, yeah.
Nothing ever comes at night.
I know. So at least there was a bear. This movie overall, I really liked. Even though when I first watched it, there were things that I wasn't quite sure of. The more I thought about it, the more I liked it. Because I do think that there's some really great writing going on here, some really clever writing, actually. I also think, as we've said, that there is some brilliant performances going on here, especially Aubrey Plaza. Yes, if there's nothing else that comes out of this movie, she needs to get recognized for this film. I did think there was a couple of pacing problems with it here and there. I thought they should have sustained maybe the momentum coming out of the first piece into the second piece. It dropped a little bit for me in the middle, but once we ramped up the second part, they got me right back. I think I need to give it at least 8 out of 10 asshole film directors. I really liked it.
Ryan.
I think we've talked a lot about and hinted at kind of the overarching like meaning to like both stories and how they connect. But the in the moment drama stuff was really, really engaging. And I don't think there was a single point where I was bored or disinterested. One really interesting thing I read when looking into it a little bit more is that the director, Lawrence Michael Levine, has actually collaborated with his wife on a lot of projects in the past. And I thought that was really interesting. And he dedicated it to her at the very end. I think that makes me wonder if this is very autobiographical for him about like his own writing process, maybe. And I think that anyone who is even mildly interested by any of the things we've said today, I say definitely check it out, because I feel like it takes a lot of risks and I really never was sure where it was going. And I really enjoyed it for that reason. And at the very end, although kind of like Chris, I was not sure how everything tied together, still thinking about it like since I watched it, and it does kind of make me want to watch it again. So I think I would give it 8 out of 10 disgruntled film crew members.
Matt?
Yeah, overall I'm in the same place. Oh, there's a lot of subversion here. Like second half, Allison kind of drinks a lot and you think she's going to be sloppy, and then when they clack the soundboard, she's actually very, very in character and just pivots on her high maintenance little toe and delivers.
Which, for the record, I want to say she had had by that point something like 18 glasses of whiskey. So this is a person who has a real problem with alcohol.
Oh yeah, I was getting that feeling bartenders get for sure when they hear the woo. There's just moments in this, like she puts a long pause in a take and the director gets impatient and cuts. She's like, no, I was doing that on purpose. You know, there's this, and they're just superbly acted. As a movie that revolves around her, you know, at one point he says to her, this movie is going to change your life. And I think that like, it's going to be a pivot point for her. There is a little bit of an accessibility problem here that keeps it from being absolutely perfect and makes it sort of for people that it's for. I'm still going to give it 8 out of 10 snarkily AWOL pepperonis.
You know, Matt, that's my biggest problem ultimately. At the end, I went, who is this for? It's not really terribly commercial in any way. I'm not sure. You're not going to get a huge audience like recommending this. And you could have. And I think part of the problem is, as you said much earlier in this review, it's uneven because it's only two parts. Now, regardless of the bookend, as you call it, which may or may not be them indicating, oh, this is just about a writer's process, that would have been great in there if there maybe had been a third piece. Because although I was fascinated, I was never bored watching this, and I think it's very well made all the way through with some tremendous performances, like we said, especially Plaza, who's mesmerizing. There would have been something that would have made it felt more complete if it was three separate pieces, and maybe we got a little bit more relating to that, oh, this is about the process of writing. Because as it is, you've got to really infer that. You know, I mean, you've got to be looking hard for what is this movie about and go, I guess it's that.
Well, and also we're calling them halves, but it's really like a pretty high energy 15-20 and yeah, then a slow burn hour. They're not time symmetrical halves. We just don't know what else to call them.
Yeah, that as well. Although I seriously think you could have taken the second half or three quarters and cut some of it off and made a third segment quite easily here.
This is one where I'd love to read the script.
There's a lot that's funny in the second half, but not necessarily essential to getting where it needs to go. And neither one of these really have a decisive ending, per se. I don't know. I ultimately came out of this both unsatisfied but also curious. Definitely interested in seeing more work by this writer-director. I was already sold on Plaza. You didn't need to sell me any further on that. But I found this a bit of a letdown overall when we got to the end. When I looked back over the whole thing, I went, well, that was unfinished. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 black bears that will work for scale. Well, it didn't have any lines. So, you know, you kind of have to work for scale there. You can't negotiate your way up. I wonder who that bear's agent is, though. I thought that bear was excellent.
They work for peanuts.